Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Andy Smith from Accolade Wines. How are you, Andy?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. You're the finance director here at Accolade?
That's correct.
So we were talking earlier about you guys actually having people at the retailers to help work out the forecast of those retailers.
Yes, indeed. We were lucky enough to be invited by Tesco to be the first wine company to actually have a person implanted within their business. And their job is to very much, you know, manage the ordering process from the customer to ourselves at Accolade, and then work with the customer to actually improve our overall forecasting. At the moment, you know, we obviously are trying to improve our forecast, and if we can get a collaborative forecast which both sides, both the customer and the supplier, agree, then it works well for both sides, and that's what we're going to try and develop next year.
I suppose that means that they're not over forecasting or ordering from you, which means that
we don't need to over forecast from our suppliers as well. And the overall name of the game is just efficiency, and you know, all the major multiples are that's what their desire is to make sure that their supply chain is as efficient as it can possibly be. And it's the same, we've got the same goals. This is an area we can actually work together for mutual gain.
Apart from having to carry stock that's unsold, what are the efficiency gains of good forecasting?
One of the big things is really making sure that we're doing the right things ahead of time, especially all the way back into the vineyards. What was really enlightening for me, I went to Australia in the summer, and we're in the UK, we're very close to the customers, we know how much we want the forecast to sell. But it was really interesting to then meet the actual winemakers and the vineyard management, who they are really on the sharp end of if we get our forecasts incorrect. Because if we're giving them an incorrect signal, they don't know what to do for the best in terms of, not just in terms of what bulk wine to produce, but also what to do for the grape. It was interesting to meet the head of the vineyards, who was saying, look, if you don't tell me how much you need, I might end up allowing some grapes to sort of not be picked in time or fall to the ground, rather than actually harvesting the right amount of grapes. And they need to also bear in mind exactly how much volume there is in terms of the yield that they're going to get from those grapes as well, and that might change their timing of exactly when they go to harvest.
Yeah, and also when they're doing their pruning, they can control how many buds they get and therefore how many grapes they get. More grapes give you maybe slightly lower quality, but an easy way of pumping up your volume, whereas if you say, oh, it's not going to be as high, they can cut the yield, maybe increase the quality a little bit, things like that.
Exactly, and I think that's where, you know, especially within the wine companies, you really realise that we're an agriculture business, and it's not just something you can turn on, using a tap. There's quite a lot of complicated production and the growing of the grapes as well, which rely on us getting our forecast correct.
What about exchange rates? Is that a area of efficiency that forecasting can help with? Do you look at your what you're going to need to bring into the country or buy, etc., and use that to forward purchase exchange if you think it's a good idea?
Yes, it will help us manage exactly, you know, the actual flows of currency that we know are going to take place. There's always an element of risk, you know, within the wine company, because we're importing, you know, a large amount of wine from all over the globe, and the currencies are going up and down all the time. So it will allow us to actually, you know, build that into our overall hedging program to try and give us some kind of stability on these exchange rates that we're using to plan with.
The other thing is, I often tell people is that you know, if you want to know what's going to be really popular next year, or in 3-4 months' time, look at whose currency's just collapsed. Because every time South African rand drops, we know there's going to be a big flood of South African wines coming to the UK, and it's going to become quite popular, those wines. It's quite hard to take into consideration, obviously, things like political risk in a country that might have material upsets for exchange rates. But do you look at that side of thing at all? I know.
Yeah, no, it will form part of of our thinking. I think generally we would probably put more emphasis on in terms of consumer trends. We have a very quite in detailed amount of insight that we try and gather from our consumers and from our customers, and trying to work out what are the kind of the trends that are occurring within the markets, and whether that is not just from an FX rates point of view, but more from what are the wine styles that people are drinking, and what kind of occasions are they drinking them with. And that is probably what we put more into our forecast for the future, rather than relying on exchange rates, because exchange rates can continually change. And I think if you're just trying to follow the market based on that, then I think you'll come unstuck in the long run. I think you're better off just sticking to what the consumers want, and ultimately what the customers are going to demand from you.
But sometimes trends appear pretty quickly. The move from Chardonnay to Pinot Grigio, the move into New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. There's a big trend into rosé that's been building over years and years and years. And recently there's a trend into these more lower alcohol, slightly sweet Muscadet styles of wines. Mm. Sometimes these trends can appear quite quickly. And if you don't have a product already, it's hard for you to see that growth of that product. I'm just thinking particularly of Muscadet at the moment, because that's a wine style I quite like, is the lower alcohol, slightly sweeter Muscadet styles. I'm a big fan of those sort of styles. They're quite good fun wines, but I don't think you guys actually have that product at the moment, and so you wouldn't necessarily see that from a demand side of point of view, and therefore know that there's growth in this market.
No, but we're not just looking at our own demand. So when we are the information that we receive from the customers, and we buy a lot of Nielsen data, we probably buy as much as we possibly can get hold of, will allow us to see not just what we're selling, but also what our competitors are selling, and what is the general trends within the market, and will allow us to spot things like the Muscadet trend come through. So I wouldn't like to sort of give away our sort of secrets or whatever, but we will constantly through the portfolio management piece be trying to anticipate new kind of ideas in terms of wine styles that people want, and therefore feed those into the actual the product life cycle to make sure that we are anticipating these kind of things and reacting to them to make sure that we've got what people want.
It does appear very reactive as opposed to proactive. You're reacting to the demand of the customer, but you're not saying, well, guys, why not try this or this? It seems to be very a reactive process as opposed to a proactive process. One of the great things about Australian wines when they first burst onto the scene was no one thought they wanted fruit-driven wines until they got them. And they're now like, wow, these are fantastic. So sometimes you can miss a trick by maybe being too reactive as opposed to proactive.
Yeah, I think we try and be as proactive as we can. I think, in terms of the type of company that we are, I think we realise we are a volume player rather than a small player like that. So we're really kind of reacting to what the large consumer trends are. I think our philosophy is really try and give the customer what they want, rather than trying to force something upon a set of customers who maybe not necessarily are ready for it or not. If we've got a lot of faith in a certain type of wine style that is new, we will definitely bring it to market and try and give that new experience to a consumer. And we've often done new product development with not just in terms of wine styles, but different product packaging as well, whereby we're bringing out new bag in box formats and PET and different sizes of wine bottles as well. And I think we're probably more proactive in that side kind of arena rather than lots of different quirky kind of wine styles. We're very strong in the kind of the Chardonnay, the Sauvignon Blanc, but if we see one of those wine styles becoming more popular, we'll obviously lean that way, and things like white Grenache we're sort of seeing becoming more and more popular.
I was going to actually ask, what are the wee trends that you're seeing? Because you've obviously got your finger on the pulse a bit more than I have. So, white Grenache.
White Grenache is something that's sort of becoming more.
I had a bottle of that a year or so ago, and it was really quite yummy at a restaurant. It was really nice. And I don't really think of white Grenache as something that the general public might be getting into.
No, I think, you know, for us, what we're also seeing and something that we're trying to promote as well is Chardonnay coming back, especially Australian Chardonnay. You know, we as an Australian company, obviously, we've produced some of the award-winning Chardonnays over the years. And I think in the UK, Chardonnay almost had a sort of a strange...
it was ABC, anything but Chardonnay, mate.
Yes, that's right, yeah. And you know, there's almost like quite a snobbish against having Chardonnay. And I used to think I didn't like Chardonnay as well. And it's only recently that I've drunk some really good quality hardy Chardonnay. And it's like, no, this is just as nice as Sauvignon Blanc. I used to would only drink Sauvignon Blanc white. And now I'm suddenly realizing that, you know, Chardonnay is actually just as nice a blend. And so that's, you know, for us, we see definitely going to see a trend in going back into Chardonnay for next year.
Yeah, yeah, and white Grenache. I mentioned Muscadet. Did you make a comment on that?
Well, I think we watch this space. Really, I think there's quite a lot in our new product development, and not everything makes it through because we are a volume player. We have certain hurdle rates that we have to hit.
Yeah,
and it's only if the product is we know is going to be significantly popular that we will actually launch it, because otherwise it wouldn't really make much sense for us to be supplying it. Is probably best left to a niche player.
5,000 cases to you isn't really big, but to some people that's massive.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think we understand what we're good at. You know, we sell some really good quality commercial wines, and we do have some good premium wines as well, and that's something that we're going to really try and drive into the next few years. But I think that in terms of something like a real kind of niche area, it might not be something that we concentrate on, because we would prefer to sort of like stick to our core market.
Okay, and given that you are quite big, you know, you do a lot of the volume, so to speak, do you find that size evens out some of the lumpiness in the forecasting?
It definitely helps. It kind of helps and it hinders. It helps in the sense that we know that, you know, as you get bigger and you've got more customers, that you know the trend is that you know the ups on one customer will match out the downs on another customer, and so the trend will be that it makes it slightly easier to forecast. The only problem with that is that, you know, when we've got promotions which may not occur for whatever reason within a customer, you also can have big swings in your forecast take place, and then that makes it, you know, more difficult especially for the supply chain to manage back in Australia. But I think overall, you know, size, it does help, because it just allows us to, we have quite a very broad distribution base across all the customers in the UK. We're selling into all channels pretty much. And therefore, if we do end up with slightly too much stock, we're able to clear it through in one way, shape or form.
Okay, so we've talked about, you know, forecasting being really useful to make sure that you get the right product in the right place at the right time, and taking into consideration maybe some over-optimistic predictions from your customers.
Yeah.
Do you use the forecast for anything else though?
Yeah, well, you know, the other main part of my role is obviously as finance director is to make sure that we are financially forecasting the right result going forward, both in terms of for our management and also shareholders because they're constantly requiring what we are doing into the future and how and what profits we're going to be making, what sales we're going to be making, and that will allow them to plan for the future as well, you know, and make strategic decisions as to how they're going to invest in different vineyards or how they're going to recompense their staff. So it's really, really important to be making sure that we're forecasting accurately, because the one thing that I've learned is that management don't like surprises. And if you've got good forecasting, you know, if you're able to sell someone in 3 or 4 months time or 6 months time that you're going to have a bad month, but actually it's not a problem because the following month after that is going to be okay, then when you actually get round to that time, it's not a surprise. Everyone known about it, and it might have even allowed you to sort of put plans in place to eradicate that shortfall, and you know you might be able to pick up some new business or make some efficiency savings, which allows you to then smooth it out and hit the budget or the target that's been set for you. And that's, you know, the probably the other biggest, you know, benefit of forecasting is that you're able to always be one step ahead of what's going to happen in the future. You're not surprised by things and you don't get caught out, such as potentially, you know, having lots of stock in a place and therefore have to write down a huge amount of stock and take a profit hit for the year.
And lose your CEO.
Yeah, and I think it just gives everybody a level of confidence that you know what you're doing and that you're in control of both your revenue streams and also your costs. And if people have got that faith, then it allows them to sort of be much more confident that we're going to continue to grow and improve into the future.
All right, Andy, I think that's everything we want to cover. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.